thank you for downloading and listening to the Beacon Podcast. And now, a word from your Supreme Chancellor.
Hi, everybody. Ever since the internet was created, it's been organized around basic principles of openness, fairness, and freedom. There are no gatekeepers deciding which sites you get to access. There are no toll roads on the information superhighway. This set of principles, the idea of net neutrality, has unleashed the power of the internet and given innovators the chance to thrive. Abandoning these principles would threaten to end the internet as we know it. That's why I'm laying out a plan to keep the internet free and open. And that's why I'm urging the Federal Communications Commission to do everything they can to protect net neutrality for everyone. They should make it clear that whether you use a computer, phone, or tablet, internet providers have a legal obligation not to block or limit your access to a website. Cable companies can't decide which online stores you can shop at or which streaming services you can use. And they can't let any company pay for priority over its competitors. To put these protections in place, I'm asking the FCC to reclassify internet service under Title II of a law known as the Telecommunications Act. In plain English, I'm asking them to recognize that for most Americans, the internet has become an essential part of everyday communication and everyday life. The FCC is an independent agency, and ultimately this decision is theirs alone. But the public has already commented nearly 4 million times asking the FCC to make sure that consumers, not the cable company, gets to decide which sites they use. Americans are making their voices heard and standing up for the principles that make the internet a powerful force for change. As long as I'm president, that's what I'll be fighting for too.
It's like we've worked for two entire decades developing something that gives each of us the ability and access to express ourselves as individuals. What happened to our freedom? It seems like this is yet another force field the government has inflicted upon us to enable more control, more power. Why do we have the least of the say? Why is it that the uneducated of the internet are the ones calling all the shots? The ones that don't understand the concept of the World Wide Web. Each and every one of us is a product of the internet. The internet is a product of us. It has grown with us and nourished within our generation. And as it stands now, I will not let it be taken control of by some power-hungry motherfuckers. Fuck sober!
Yes, fuck SOPA, fuck CISPA, fuck NAFTA, fuck TAFTA, fuck TPP, fuck all of this shit.
And fuck you, Mr. Obama. I'm tired of this shit.
And everybody out there, you better start speaking up or your freedoms will be gone. Gone.
Allows us a chance at gaining more access to tools which would in turn speed the process of learning, communicating, and sharing. It enables us to gain awareness of what's happening across the globe and share what we see or hear. Social networking sites have granted us the ability to share information that much easier. Songs, pictures, videos. How can something as simple as posting a link generated by the internet be classified as copyright infringement, therefore forcing sites to feel obligated to take them all down? What would the internet really be without reblogging, reposting, retweeting? The internet was created to make lives easier, not harder. The internet was developed to break our limits, not create them.
Boom. Beacon Podcast is coming at you.
Fuck SOPA!
Yes, and we're in full agreement with this man. That was Axion. And the song is called Internet Revolution.
If you that guys was fucking delicious.
Yeah, at least people out there are feeling the same as some of us. We're not alone, people. We're just being quiet. For some reason, we're just being quiet. I would say that we're probably in the majority, but nobody's speaking up. So go dig your hands in your pants, find your balls, and do something to help this cause. Please. Okay? Nick, how's it going, buddy?
Pretty good, brother. Just been busy as shit. Took the old lady out today. Just cruising around looking at wildflowers. We have the poppies going off in Southern California, which is our state flower, and she wanted to go see that.
Nice.
And that was nice. That was amazing.
Yeah. Did you frolic?
A little bit of frolicking, yeah, but I told her, don't step on the fucking flowers. We came out here to see them, and she's fucking walking all over them.
Did you take the dog?
No, hell no. Fuck that thing.
Really?
It's a pain in the ass.
Oh. Huh.
No, we didn't take the dog. We just went out, had some breakfast, looked at flowers. From there, we went up to the mountains. There's like a little bar kind of off the, kind of where the poppies are at. Had a little Bloody Mary. Watched a guy eat shit on his Harley. You know?
Dude, it sounds like you had an excellent day.
And then we did a little shopping at Target. And where else did we go? Target. It was a busy day. And it was a day off, but fucking, it went by quick. The time went by fast. And I felt bad because I left a phone on the charger. You know, in the morning I woke up, was going to make some coffee, put the phone on the charger. She woke up and it was like, hey, let's go check out the flowers, get some breakfast, you know. And I was like, fuck. I know you're going to hit me up for the show because we already talked about doing the show today.
Yeah.
And, dude, time was, like, going by so fast. It was like, you ever watch 60 seconds go by?
Dude, it just like,
that was a minute?
Yeah. I feel like the older I get, the faster time goes. Like, I feel like time is just flying by right now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, a year now to me is like, when I was a kid, 10 minutes was a long time. I feel like 10 minutes when I was a kid was longer than a year is now.
Well, I mean, 10 minutes of doing your homework or sitting in the corner is a long time. 10 minutes in the ball pit at McDonald's or Chuck E. Cheese or whatever goes by like that fast.
Your parents are like, it's been 10 minutes. What?
Shut the fuck up, Mom.
I remember when I was a kid learning how long 10 minutes was. And I remember this is the first time I had actually gauged time. And I remember her going, okay, we got to leave in 10 minutes. And going, okay, let me measure 10 minutes. What's 10 minutes? And going,
1,000 to 1,000.
10 minutes. To me, I thought it was horrible. And that's not that bad. 10 minutes isn't that bad.
Yeah.
But that was like my first time gauging like what time was. Kind of a weird thought, huh?
For sure.
I don't know. Are you ready to tackle this subject today?
You're damn right I am. It affects us all.
Oh, this one is
If you're important. Listening to this show, well, guess what? You might not be listening to it for very long because we are going to be censored like a motherfucker.
If anything gets censored,
I won't be able to say motherfucker. The idea of somebody fucking a mother.
Now, you know what? Cussing will be totally fine because the morality of the nation, they want to decline.
Yes.
It's not the cussing. It's the truth that they hate.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or the idea of somebody seeking out something else that they're teaching.
Other than the status quo or what they're teaching. Yeah. 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 Their version of truth, which is not fucking the truth.
Which is going to be a topic for future shows. We're kind of going to get into the Common Core curriculum in the future, which is happening at this time.
Yeah, this is in effect.
Yeah. My dad was asking me questions. We were talking about school in general, and I was asking about, you know, he's raising a child that he's recently adopted, and she's like probably in the first or second grade, but she's doing really well. It's like she's a curious kid. Like, really talented at music and reading and everything.
Yeah.
Well, she reads all her books, does all her homework, and she wants to do more. She, like, digs learning, right?
Yeah.
Well, so my dad's wife goes in and goes, hey, is there any other books or something we could read? And the teacher straight out told her,
no child's left behind.
No. If I was to give you other topics, I could be fired.
Mm-hmm.
I can only give you what is given to me, and that's it.
And that's how bureaucracies work. Yeah.
I cannot suggest anything else to you.
Yeah.
I could lose my fucking job. By doing, you know what he needs to do? Doing their job.
He need. Why don't he? If he wants to get her like good learning material, hit you up or you know hit me up.
Yeah,
I dude, I've got. Man, there's so much awesome stuff out there for a kid to learn. It's just nobody's asking. You know what I mean? Like, how about he can teach her the correct view of history, revisionist history, mm-hmm. you know?
And to question
then,
authority.
And then she can compare that with what she learns in school. How cool would that be if he prepares her that way, you know?
Can you imagine a second grader learning about Columbus going, wasn't he like kind of a rapist?
You know? Yeah.
How would a teacher fucking respond to that? It'd make their job a little harder, but it'd make them need to learn their job a little bit better, I would imagine.
Yeah, and plus, you know, when the state gets a hold of education, it's just like anything else. It takes the heart away from anything. You see the DMV, there's no heart in a government facility. It's literally slaves performing mundane tasks, watching the clock go by, because they just want to get off work. They don't want to be there, and I don't blame them. But then you get shitty service. Like, there's no incentive to be better at all. I just saw a video today of a leaked video in the 1990s, a Soviet grocery store. It was just a Soviet grocery store inside of it. But, dude, depressing.
Yeah.
Depressing. Some of the check stands are just crushed, like obliterated, like they were demolishing them and then decided, you know, work was up or whatever, so they just left it there and are going to get back to it later or something. Like all areas of demolition inside, there's no decorations. It's literally just the same. It has a big old crate of the same kind of food, and it's not all packaged. Some of the meat's hanging out and it doesn't look safe, and the people are like kicking it up, smelling it to see if it's okay, like to see if it's safe. You have like very limited choices, and at that, if you're not one of the first people when the delivery happens,
you're getting shitty food.
Yeah, and I'll bet that it's timed, that you have a certain time that you have to go, and if you're bad, you know, you're not playing by all the rules of the state, you get a shitty time, you know, you get a shitty job, you get a shitty time. And I could not live in a world like that. And you see the people's eyes when they're in line to get their groceries, and they literally look like, you know, you can just see like empty eyes. They just have empty eyes. Like there's nothing, there's no depth behind those things. You know, like it's almost like they've just given up ever like that. I think that freedom thing.
Well, it's the same as the caged animal in a zoo. It's not this. If you see a tiger in a zoo, it's not the same if you were out in the fucking
yeah. That's jungle. It's exactly, they reminded me more so of animals than humans. They were.
It's a cage mentality. You're not free.
Yeah.
And you know, I would like to hope that if you could look into any American's eyes, they'd have that glean. Like I could be something. I could do something.
I hope that's increasing right now. Like now that people see that it's really like threatened, now more than ever, you should have that. Because the only way that you're going to have that is if you can actually, at this particular point in history, stand up for that, fight for that.
Yeah.
And like I know for me personally, I feel a bigger sense of inner freedom than I've ever felt in my whole life. The only reason I'm good to other people isn't because the state tells me I have to be good. It's because I've learned self-government.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've learned self-government, you don't need, you know, the exterior government to tell you what to do, because you do what's right because it's right, because you know it's right.
But like you've learned to educate yourself by just picking up a book that leads you to into something else, shutting the TV off, you know, knowing your inner self in a way.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, like what have you done to change your life in major ways that have helped you?
Is that that's a question?
Sorry. Yeah.
Sorry. I didn't know if it was rhetorical or not.
Yeah. I mean, I'm asking you like, because
you're going to think it's gay.
You've enlightened yourself in a way, I believe. I've known you since high school days.
Yeah.
And you've always been Matt. You know, you're a great guy. But you're passionate about what you believe. You go out, you start a podcast like this, which I got to thank you for letting me be a part of. It's awesome. You know,
no problem. It's my pleasure.
And I'm passionate about it. I love doing this. And it's opened my eyes to, you know, we've talked about a lot of things, NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, the socialist agenda, you know,
And which I probably wouldn't have noticed as much. You know, I'd just be the same old guy, just out there doing my job, working my fucking 60 hours a week sometimes, going home, chilling out, watching the fucking news, and just dealing with it. Paying my taxes, paying my bills, and doing, you know, which I still do. But, like, how have you, what's changed you the most, would you say? I mean,
you know, I started with just getting a little bit of curiosity when I was watching the news and going...
And there's nothing wrong with that.
And, well, I just remember thinking, why is every single decision made worse for us?
Yeah, it's not getting better.
Like, no decision, when you watch the news, no decision that's ever made is in our favor.
Yeah.
And so I remember just going, that's so weird. Like, could that many people be dumb out there? That this is what the people want, and they want to get, they want what's worse and worse and worse. And I remember, like, getting so frustrated. And I remember at some point, you know, a few years into feeling like this, just going, I wonder if this shit's set up. Mm-hmm. You know, I wonder if it's, like, set up to fail, you know? And then and at that point, I was not really, I had turned my back on religion completely. And I'm not religious at all. But I, in all sincerity in my heart, just prayed to whatever was listening, hey, I just want to know the truth. And I'm just me personally, something happened that made me just, it didn't tell me the truth. It just went, it gave me the drive to just go out and start like earning it on my own.
And that's in you.
You know what I mean?
The curiosity that's in you.
Yeah. So then I just started something. I caught like a bug after that, dude. And I just was like, I have to know the truth. So I was like, truth about this, truth about that, truth about this.
Seeking hoax information.
This. Is this a hoax? Is that a hoax? Is what is this, that, this? What's, you know, and I was just on a thing. And then you end up finding really good authors that way. Mm-hmm. You end up finding misinformation artists. You end up finding who's out there that's distracting you from the truth. And you end up finding out different agendas and why. And then it leads you into history. And then it leads you along, you know, socialism is a big one. That's why I really wanted to have a major education on this show into the depths of socialism. I think we did a really good job at covering it from its beginning, you know.
And there's still more to be discussed.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. We're not done. But we've done I think we've done a really good job. If people want to know about socialism, just check out some of our past shows.
Yes.
The Socialist Utopian Delusion show. We go into the theory of Karl Marx and Lenin and Trotsky and Stalin. And we follow the timeline of how socialism's progressed through the years. But anyways... That's kind of my answer to your question. Sorry.
Thanks, man. That's
long-winded.
Great. No, yeah. It's fine. It's great.
How about you? Same question. Right back at you.
Yeah, I mean, as I've gotten older, you know, I grew up into skateboarding, and I thought graffiti art was cool. I still think graffiti art is cool, but I was always against the system in a way. You know what I mean? I love punk rock music. I still do. And I've always loved to question authority, right? And it just led me to read articles on anything, you know, like, well, this history isn't right.
Felt you were being lied to or something?
Kind of. Like, I couldn't fall for what was considered to be correct. Mm-hmm. But I think that I was just born that way, dude. You know, my parents were, they tried to make me a Christian, right?
Yeah.
And it would have worked except for I asked questions.
Yeah.
And whenever I ask questions, I'm not getting an answer. I'm like, well, this is fucking obviously bullshit.
Yeah. That's actually why I turned away from it. I was raised Christian also.
Yeah.
And I at 18, when I could, I completely left church. I never came back. Went back.
And so it's an addiction. Like, information is addicting. Like, this leads to this, and you're just going to keep following that fucking rabbit hole, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, my parents could never answer my questions. Like, I would be like, well, Noah's Ark, there's no fucking way some old 300-year-old guy could build a boat and have every fucking species, you know. And they're like, how dare you fucking question the Bible? And I was like, well, you can't answer me. You're fucking retarded, obviously. Yeah. Well, that's how I thought back then. Not that my parents are retarded or there's anything wrong with being retarded. But so that sent me down a path of questioning authority, you know, mm-hmm. and which was hard because my grandfather was a police officer who was a great guy, you know, and but he was also an atheist as well. So him and I got along on that point of view, you know, questioning religion.
Yeah.
But, you know, then I got more into punk rock and skateboarding and things like that. And I was just always questioning things, you know.
Yeah. So, sorry. Is that kind of
That's pretty much it. It was just questioning authority, just being curious. I guess that's the best way to answer it in the shortest sense. I'm just a curious guy. Like, what's this like?
Yeah.
Well, is this true or not? Can I research this? You know?
And that's part of the process of breaking free from just accepting blindly information without checking it out, right?
Exactly.
And so do you remember on the NLP show that we did, there was that part of your brain called the critical factor. And the critical factor was when your guard's up and the subliminals can sink their way past your conscious brain into the subconscious brain. But if you're highly critical, then you can actually catch some of that stuff, especially if you're educated in those subliminals and you can see them. So I think this whole process of educating yourself into this whole thing actually helps fortify your brain from being influenced by outside sources. But it starts off pretty similar with both of us. Mm-hmm. It started with us becoming critical. We both felt jaded by the shit we were being told, and so then we were being critical. And what happened to us, the major, if we did anything for anybody out there, I think that one of the best services that we could ever provide anybody is teach them how just to be critical of information. Learn how to research. Learn how to question and look up things. And don't take anything without validating it first. Don't accept anything as true without validating it to yourself first. You know, you have to almost, it takes like a rewiring of your brain a little bit. Yeah. So that's good.
And like, I'm not going to pretend to tell everybody that I have all the answers, because I don't. But I'm always curious about things. Like, is this one brick in front of another brick that I'm always going to be constantly, does this path lead me here? You know?
Yeah.
And, oh, man, I was wrong in thinking this, you know?
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I like it. I'm content with my life. I just hope we could do better for our country and our future, you know?
And I think that if you're constantly, like, yearning for knowledge and truth, especially truth, truth's the big one. If you're yearning for truth, I think your life's just going to keep getting better and better. You're going to, you know, come into some tough times, you know, and dark times. But I think that the search for truth is kind of, I mean, I think that's kind of what it's all about, you know,
mm-hmm.
especially when there's so many lies out there. When you realize that the web of lies that has been spun around us to make us believe certain things has not been going on for a few years. This has been going on for ages.
And that's like, that's not part of the topic that we're getting into, but I would like to just see, you know, we are always given these, we get two people to choose from on most of
you get voting. A dialectic.
Yeah. And it's just, I would like to see people say, well, both parties have lied to us so many times. Oh, you're going to talk about education? Awesome. You're going to fix the roads? Awesome. They never do, right? Have they ever in the history?
No. It's just hot air coming out of their mouth.
They raise taxes and do schools. Well, where we live in California, have the schools gotten better at all?
No.
Fuck no.
No, worse.
I would like to do a social experiment. How about nobody votes on anybody? It's like, I refuse both candidates.
Yeah.
They're both pieces of shit that are getting paid to be here.
And then you'll always hear people go up to you and go, dude, but you got to pick the better of two evils. And I go, not, that's still voting for evil.
Yeah.
No. But I don't think voting's going to change anything. To tell you the truth, I think the only way in America to change, and I think America is the battleground for the world right now, because we're the only ones that can defend what we're talking about. Freedom, the battle for freedom is right. It's in America. The other countries don't have the capabilities that we have. Mm. So we are kind of at a kind of a crossroads. What do we do? Like, do you just start sitting back and acquiescing and admitting defeat? No, because that's part of that SPX principle, that Soviet principle 10, mm-hmm. where if they almost can convince you that you're helpless and you've already lost, then you won't fight. And that's another thing that they're trying to do.
Dude, I totally feel that. Oh, I feel like we're there.
Dude, why else do you see all the fucking crazy shit in the Grammys that they're like basically, they're like all these movie stars are basically coming out with all this secret society symbolism and shit. And we're going to go into this stuff on some future broadcasts where you will be able to seriously watch the Grammys and go, oh, I know exactly what they're doing. They're doing this ritual. They're doing that ritual. It's very blatant. But here's the thing. They're just cocky as fuck. There's no way that they're more powerful than us. There's 300 million of us who have guns, who can have guns right yeah. now. That is an unstoppable force. So the battle lies in, it's an ideological battle right now. It is still in the realm of getting the word out. But if you guys have been listening at home and you have not been acting on your own, I would encourage you to get it into gear, because guess what? Net neutrality just passed, and we're going to talk about that on this show. So the shit that we're talking, and Nick, was it about a year ago that we actually told people, guarantee yeah. the internet will get taken over and censored?
It's only a matter of time.
By the feds.
The government can't let anything that makes money without them getting their hands in it. Which they have to be getting tax. You know, if you buy something on Amazon, of course you're paying taxes on that.
Yeah,
and but I don't it's not enough. Money.
I think it's
the message.
The message is the biggest thing. There's people like us that are getting actual real truth out there, and that is the worst part. That's the worst threat to them.
Yeah,
that's the worst threat. So if you guys have just been sitting at home, if you think that you're gonna be free someday without action, think again. You have to act somehow. That's how this reality works. And we're going to get into the mystery schools, and we're going to talk about how this reality actually works. But if you don't actually act, then you have no power. You have absolutely no power. That's another reason why we're doing this podcast. You have to spring into action. Nick, let's take a little break, and then we'll get into net neutrality, unless you got something else, buddy.
Sounds good to me.
All right. We're going to take a little bit of a break, and then we're into net neutrality.
Thank you for downloading the Beacon Podcast.
What is your password? Your password has been accepted.
Plugged into a stream of real-time data. Cyborg soldier. A techno warrior. Computer, camera, optical display, all connected to the World Wide Web.
Personal cybernetic technologies, personal cybernetic.
Pioneering the computerized lifestyle. The World Wide Web.
This is certainly going to horrify some of the people who are sitting there listening to this. Cameras are extensions of human vision. And databases are extensions of human memory. Are you honestly going to stop them?
Please log in the information requested.
What's in the way? Well, ignorance. That's what's the problem. We have a great number of highly educated people who know a great deal about very little.
The World Wide Web. Our environment will be fitted with thousands of wireless devices for every humanless devices for every human. Because of the electronic surveillance, security cameras, microphones.
Wide Web. The World Wide Web is a interesting thing.
The World Wide Web.
On one hand, it gives us more access to knowledge than we ever dreamed possible. But on the other hand, it allows for your enslavement at the same time. It's like a freeing mechanism, yet an enslaving mechanism at the same time.
Well, if you are on the World Wide Web at this moment, I recommend you look up Deschutes Brewery, because as you may or may not know, here at the Beacon Podcast, we fucking love our craft beers.
Yes.
And Deschutes Brewery, I bow down, because we're drinking a new one by you guys. I believe it's new. Well, it's 2014 release. It's a fresh hop IPA called Chasing Freshies, and
I love that name.
It's so delicious. I want to stick my dick in it.
It's called Chasing Freshies.
And so, it tastes like weed, kind of.
Hoppiness, hops kind of have that smell, you know?
It has mosaic hops. Dude, I'm seeing some floaties in the bottom.
Yeah, that's got to be good. I don't know.
Hoppy floaties on the bottom of the beer.
All right, Nick, I'm going to start into this, brother.
Let's do this shit. Thank you, Deschutes Brewery. We love your beer.
Okay, net neutrality, guys. Let's actually really discuss what is this net neutrality. Now, this net neutrality just recently passed. And when I say passed, that means the FCC's commissioners got to vote on it, and it passed by a vote of 3-2. So it passed. So in that, let's actually talk about what passed. And what does it mean for us? What is this? Because it sounds good. Net neutrality sounds great.
It's but neutral,
so did
bro.
The Patriot
Act. Dude, it's neutral. It's neutral.
So did the National Defense Authorization Act. These things sound great. Homeland Security sounds
Our
great.
Our president's for it. It's got to be good. Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody. Dude, tell me this guy doesn't sound like Kermit the Frog at the beginning of this.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody. Me and Miss Piggy are going for a bike ride.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
All right. We're gonna get totally kicked off the internet for saying this shit.
Well, that's what's going to happen with net neutrality. I mean, it's the only matter of time before we're all censored. You can't say that, bro.
You can't say that. Well, we can't. We always promise the people we would never censor ourselves, and we'd always give them the truth. I will never censor ourselves. I will never incite violence. I will never do wrong to another human being, but I will always just say the truth.
Kermit the Frog here.
And if we end up getting censored because of the truth, then that, you guys at home really got to think long and hard about what side of that you want to be on. You want to be living a life of lies? That's up to you, but that's fucked up.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody. Okay. We got to make that like just a snippet.
That will always be on the show.
Like
from
the Sue Sue Studio snippet.
Stu Studio.
All right, so here we go. Net neutrality, what is this? It's also called, the actual term that the FCC uses is called the open internet. It's also known as network neutrality, internet neutrality, or net equality. Now, net neutrality is, the definition is, the principle that internet service providers and governments should treat all data on the internet equally, not discriminating or charging differently by user, content, site, platform, application, type of attached equipment, or mode of communication. No fast or slow lanes. And this term was coined by a professor from Columbia University named Tim Wu. Why do we have Chinese guys giving us terms on how to... anyways, sorry. That sounds racist. He coined the term in 2003. This has been kind of an ongoing problem, and we're going to go into the history of that. Right now, just so you guys know, the chairman of the FCC, his name is Tom Wheeler. We're going to refer to him several times. So recently, Tom Wheeler and the FCC had rules permitting the ISPs. ISP means Internet Service Providers, okay? And since we're at that, we should probably define what internet service provider is, shall we? I have that pulled up on a separate screen here.
Like Time Warner is a major one.
Yeah. It is technically... Whoops, sorry, that's the wrong screen. Oh, sorry, I don't have it. An internet service provider, yeah, is who, you know what? This is worth, I think I deleted that screen. I'm going to actually look it up because I believe...
Well, if you're listening to the show, you have an internet service provider.
Of course. But
they're trying to minimize it. They're trying to break that down, right?
I mean, yeah. But I just want to get the definition right. That way people know exactly what we're talking about because some of these things can get a little bit confusing. All right, here we go. An internet service provider is an organization that provides services for accessing, using, or participating in the internet. So whoever you go through, you pay an internet bill to somebody, that's your internet service provider, okay? So there's rules permitting the internet service providers to block or restrict traffic. Those are called like fast lanes. These are recently introduced by the FCC. The FCC is the government. That is called the Federal Communications Commission, and that is our government's branch that controls communications. They're in charge of the telephone lines. They're in charge of radio frequencies that have to deal with interstate commerce. That kind of stuff. They're in charge of communications, okay? Now, in this fast lanes, if an internet service provider is giving... The whole thing with this is that internet service providers want to charge certain companies... more money if they are using more internet data. And they call that, they're going to give them a fast lane. They're going to give them more, it's called bandwidth, and we'll get into all this stuff. But they basically give them preferential treatment if they pay for it. This would violate net neutrality, which says that all traffic should be treated equally, like we talked about earlier, right? So, net neutrality is saying that the internet service providers who are like Verizon, Comcast, AT&T, whoever provides your internet, they have to provide the same speed and the same quality of internet to the average residential user as they provide to your larger users. And your larger users are going to be what's called your content providers. Your content providers are like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon is streaming movies now. And the reason that this is now becoming a issue is because these content providers are providing high, high quality content, HD movies. HD movies are your highest, your most data intensive information that passes mm-hmm. across the internet. And now that you're getting like crystal clear HD video on Netflix, Hulu, all this stuff, the infrastructure of the internet is not beefed up enough to support all of that, and it needs to be beefed up. And it's all about who's going to pay for that beefing up. The internet service providers argue that the content providers like Netflix, the people that are using all the content, should be the ones that have to pay for it. The FCC and the content providers argue that they shouldn't have to pay for it, and that so the internet service providers are threatening the content providers, saying, if you don't pay us more money for us to beef up the infrastructure, we'll throttle your services down. And they're threatening them with throttling their services down, which means giving them like a slower connection speed. We'll throttle your services down. And so Netflix, Amazon, these people at Hulu, they're tripping out. And they're like, we don't think you should do that. So they're on the side of the government saying, you shouldn't be able to throttle anybody down. There should be one speed for everybody on the internet, and nobody should have to pay more. So it's a business move for the content providers, but it's also a business move for the internet service providers. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And we'll go into it. It'll be crystal clear. Just stay with us, guys. So we have to understand what bandwidth is.
That's what I was going to ask you right now. If something takes so much bandwidth, I mean, of course it's going to slow everything down.
Yeah. So bandwidth is...
Well, like if this show gets a lot bigger, you know, meaning more listeners, we need to increase our bandwidth.
Because it's been getting huge.
Just people on Twitter are digging it.
Yeah. No,
I don't know if we're getting more listeners. Yeah.
I'm happy with the growth.
We've been getting really good feedback on topics like, you know, getting vaccinated and everything since we discussed that last show. But I love it. I'm loving the feedback.
Yeah, I
agree. And I'm loving the internet. You know, I want to do everything I can to keep free speech going, as it has been. But and you know what? I do believe that if you are providing service, you should be. It's hard to say. Like, if you're an internet service provider, and Netflix is slowing you down, how are you profiting?
Yeah. These questions will start to, because we're going to dive actually into the background and everything that happens, all the ins and outs and the nooks and crannies of all of it.
Yes.
And it'll make more and more sense, especially from a libertarian type perspective. It'll make more and more sense. So essentially, so what bandwidth actually is bandwidth, internet service providers, they sell plans based on bandwidth. They're sold in bits per second, megabits per second, or gigabytes per second, right? So that's what it is. It's how much bytes per second you get. So you sign up for a certain plan and they guarantee you a certain bits per second. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what bandwidth is. So the increase, right now we're having an increase in bandwidth demand because of higher quality content. Does that make sense?
Yes.
This is creating a need for the increased infrastructure. They have to beef up the infrastructure and the equipment and everything to be able to support that increased bandwidth demand.
Yeah, but don't they have enough customers to pay for that?
Well, so that's the question, is where does the cost get passed down or what?
Well, isn't it Obama's theory that everyone should get the internet for free? I mean...
Well, that's socialism.
Yeah, if you want something, you
that
fucking...
That everybody should get something, you know, but at the cost of everybody else.
I'm not saying I agree with it. I mean, I love the internet and everything. But yeah, if you could buy a computer, you could pay the monthly fee or whatever through whatever provider you have.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it all starts making sense when you view it from at least the background that we've been talking about, the socialism and that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, I go through Time Warner for my internet.
Which is now AOL, Time Warner.
If there was a better, but that's the only option I have. I mean, I have DirecTV, that could be an option, but the DirecTV salesman told me, oh yeah, they've got way better internet than we do. But if there was a better wire I could hook up to.
Yeah. So and we're actually going to get into that.
I would be fucking paying for it.
We're going to get into the fact that these companies also have virtual monopolies in certain regions.
Definitely.
We're going to get into that as well. Because that is one of the major issues at stake right now. That's one of the major issues. That's one of the major arguments that the proponents of net neutrality argue. So they say the people don't have a choice. They're getting gouged. The prices are getting gouged. That kind of stuff. So, let's talk about something called a contention ratio, all right? The contention ratio is we're talking about bandwidth here. The contention ratio is the potential maximum demand to the actual bandwidth provided, okay? So, the demand versus what's provided. That's the contention ratio. And obviously, the internet service providers that sell bandwidth that can only have a certain amount to provide, their infrastructure only supports a certain amount, they can only sell a certain amount. But what happens is, and they sell those bandwidths based on bits per second, like we talked about, but what they do as a business move is they oversell the bandwidth. They sell more bandwidth than they have capacity for, similar to how a plane would oversell the tickets, because they know, Nick, if you bought you know, a 10 gigabyte download speed. They know you're hardly ever using that actual speed, right? Mm-hmm. And so because you're not actually using that speed all the time, then they can actually oversell their service because they know nobody's using at all the time the maximum download capability that they paid for. Does that make sense?
Totally. Gotcha.
So they oversell. They calculate the total use and they oversell their service because they know not everyone is maxing out on their bandwidth at all
the time. I wonder how they figure that out, though. Like there's got to be guys in their mom's basement playing a million video games using more bandwidth than they could even buy.
Well, I think you can incur fees or no, you will just get limited.
You're limited.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like overbooking flights, or it's like another one that I've heard of, Stefan Molyneux. I got a lot of information off of Stefan Molyneux's podcast, which is really
Free
good.
Free Domain Radio is a great podcast. Yeah. I love that guy.
I agree
great.
With him on some stuff, not everything.
He gets a little crazy sometimes with shit, but like you said, it's great information.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the freedom to take what you think is real or not and go out and investigate it.
Exactly. It's just another avenue of learning.
It's take this information and take it in a certain direction that you know, that makes you curious.
Yep. He had a really good analogy on this, like, overselling service that was freeways. Freeways are not built for all people to travel where they have to go all at once.
Yeah, you can make a bunch every lane for every person that takes the freeway.
There's no way, right? But they take an average, and they actually sometimes do a super shitty job at that. Look at the 405-101.
Yeah.
Interchange in LA that's like historically like just a like it's like one of the world's worst interchanges, right? Mm-hmm. It's always crowded, you're always in line for a while, but so does that make sense? So then they calculate it based on, you know, the trends of people, and they try to be able to build enough roads to accommodate your average predictable traffic flow, right? So another thing that's interesting too is that as far as data usage, around 90% of data on the internet is used by like under 10% of the users. So there's major users out there, and then there's other people out there that just don't use a lot of data, you know?
Yeah.
This is kind of when that contention ratio, and as that contention ratio approaches one, which is, they've sold exactly as much as they have capability for, that equals what something called network congestion. Just like a traffic jam, it acts the same way, and that equals slower internet speeds. That's when you start to see your buffering on your videos and that kind of shit, okay? So it acts just like a traffic jam. It's called network congestion. So the idea here is because Netflix and these things are using more and more data, they're causing increased network congestion, and the internet service providers can't fulfill their obligations to everybody else because of the network congestion.
They can't
fulfill the bandwidth speeds, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. So if the internet service provider is congested, then it has to reroute traffic to another internet service provider or beef up its infrastructure. There are multiple companies and they form this web, right? It's the World Wide Web. And these internet service providers will connect and they'll be able to reroute information. Say there's a traffic jam somewhere, a direct data route. They can actually reroute information if it's faster.
Like an air traffic controller kind of.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Or like a detour when you're driving.
Yeah.
Kind of like that. And that's called peering. When these different internet service providers exchange content, it's called peering, okay?
Like a pier, like you go to the pier at the ocean and you go grab a fish taco or something. Same kind of pier?
Yeah, like peering is
spelled
like,
the same?
Like you have the right to a jury of your peers.
Oh,
peers
gotcha.
Are like your, like people similar
different
to you.
Different type of peer. I was right? wondering about the spelling.
Is yeah.
All. Okay.
So a peering is a voluntary interconnection of separate internet networks for the purpose of exchanging traffic between users. Sometimes they charge for this, sometimes they don't. As we're going to see, a really important thing in this story is that a lot of these internet service providers charge peering rates. Mm-hmm. They charge peering rates, okay? Okay, so are we all caught up? All of that makes sense. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, I'm digging it.
Okay. Any questions? It's pretty cut and dry. Okay.
Yeah.
So here's where it gets really, really interesting. Now we actually talk about the actual infrastructure, okay? When the internet first came out, it was carried over the telephone lines, and it was done through DSL. Remember that?
I remember it took like an hour to see a tit.
That's not even worth it.
I can almost see her chest. Oh, shit. Look at her shoulders.
And it froze. Yeah. And it got congested. Network congestion. Damn it. Yeah, so the DSLs were built over the telephone wires, okay? And you have to remember, DSL was over the telephone wires, and the broadband connections are generally carried over the cable wires. Two different sets of wires, but it means a whole world of difference in this net neutrality argument, okay?
Like, we supply the wires, we should get paid.
Well, this is where it gets really, really, really interesting, because the Federal Communications Commission, back in the
people who freak out about Janet Jackson's nipple,
yes,
yeah,
back in the 30s, they created regulations that allowed them to heavily regulate telecommunications services. Okay, but they haven't been able to, because they were considered public utilities. They were considered for the common good. Okay.
And now, that was the only entertainment you had. You didn't have television. You know, it was only the radio back then.
Yeah. And they didn't want telecommunications companies discriminating who could talk to each other, who couldn't. It was considered a public utility like roads. And okay. So the feds assumed control over it, assuming it was fair. They subsidized the company in charge of it, which was AT&T, and then they required them to keep it open for everybody, not discriminate at all, right? So, and then the other difference is broadband internet is carried over the cable lines, which does not fall under telecommunications. It's considered information services, and it's not regulated as heavily by the FCC. It's under a whole different code.
Nice.
And we'll talk about that. But so the whole difference is the disparity between DSL and broadband and telephone wires and cable wires. Okay? So television, and this is just kind of a nice to know, television evolved from air transmission to a cable infrastructure, which FCC fought at the time. They fought that because they knew probably that this thing was going to be used for some pretty crazy shit eventually. And actually, what's funny, another thing that I'll just, an aside, is the telephone wires way back in the day, their rival was the telegraph companies. The fucking Morse code telegraph. Yeah. Which internet now really is it not just fast telegraph? Because it's all ones and zeros.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's just fast, fast telegraph. It's just a lot of information. All right, so hope we're learning some stuff.
Well, it's like a good friend of mine, he works for the Postal Service, right?
Mm-hmm.
Good guy, everything, done his job, but it comes a time when there's a technology will overcome what you do, and you're either gonna step
adapt
up and or you're gonna back off, you know.
Yeah.
Like I never mail anything ever. I haven't gone to the Postal Service. I haven't even touched
unless
my mailbox.
Something requires it, I never do.
The only time I've ever done it was when I FedEx something to my nieces for Christmas or something, you know?
Yeah. All right. So some of this is just refresher. So we understand that due to increased bandwidth demands by certain content providers like Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, HD video content providers, the infrastructure needs to be beefed up right now. There's too much congestion right now as it is. That's what the internet service providers say. Okay. So either the internet service provider can raise rates to everyone all at one time to beef up that infrastructure, Or they can offer a fast lane for content providers with high bandwidth demands, willing to pay premium. You know, that's those are the options right now.
Dude, okay, you talked about the 405 and the 110 interchange. If you drove that every day, but there was a option, hey, I'll pay $1 a day to go through this lane where it gets me over the hill in 20 minutes.
Perfect.
Would you not do it?
Perfect. That's great. I mean, I don't know if I would, but plus, even if I wouldn't, it helps decrease congestion on the slow lanes. It's a win-win.
Totally.
The people that want it get it. It's another thing Stefan Molyneux said. It's like first class. The luxury rates help subsidize the lesser services, right?
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's the exact same thing. And I agree. I'm on your side with that one.
Yeah, I mean, if I commuted all the time, I would totally... It'd be worth it for me to pay to get to my job faster or wherever I'm going faster.
And some people decide
in this case...
But that's free market decisions. You get to make the decision.
Well, we can't have that. I mean, with the internet, you're damn right. If I could pay for to see Evangelina fucking... get railed, buck nutty. I'm fucking, fuck yeah. Or whatever. Like, whatever the information is that I need to see.
Yeah.
If I can afford it, you're damn right I'm going to fucking pay to have faster service.
Yeah. And you know what? As long as there's competition out there, then rates will go down eventually.
Exactly.
Because technology makes things easier.
As it
makes
advances.
Rates go down.
Flat screen TVs used to be fucking ridiculously expensive. Look at them now.
Oh, yeah. And that's because there's a billion TV companies out there competing with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to put out a better product.
Yep. So also what this fast lane would also do under our current system, it would be traffic routed through peering sent to less congested nodes in that web, less congested nodes and routes, while the slow lane subscribers traffic would be routed through less optimal and more congested pathways. But it would, your slow service would be similar to what it is now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The paying more would help in the better infrastructure. It's not like the net neutrality advocates say, you're going to have slow, shitty internet, you know, if you don't do this. Well, nothing's changed. Like, they think that these internet service providers are just going to go start throttling people back. Why would they do that? Well, how would that benefit them?
It wouldn't at all. I mean.
Well, they have arguments that think that it will. But anyways, let me continue. So net neutrality proponents say that larger companies who can afford to pay the premium will have an advantage over smaller competitors, and that internet service providers will be able to block or restrict traffic, giving them an unfair advantage over their competitors, right? Many net neutrality proponents happen to be in a position where they would have to pay if paid prioritization was realized. So if this fast lane, slow lane thing happened, then a lot of the companies that are in favor of net neutrality are the ones that would have to pay more. So it's a business move for them. And the way the modern corporation is set up, they have to do what's best for the stockholders. And so just by nature of the way the modern corporation is set up, they have to support net neutrality. Like Netflix has to.
Mm-hmm.
Based if it's to serve its stockholders. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if the internet did not exist, there would not be a Netflix, obviously.
Right. That's the net part of Netflix.
And look how quickly they fucking grew. Like, they're amazing. People love it. Mm-hmm. Cable companies hate Netflix. Cable companies who provide the internet. It's so mixed up, I believe. Like,
but it's competition. And I think that's good.
Competition is definitely good.
Yeah. You know, it's you don't get your Michael Jordans because everybody was nice to each other on the basketball court. You know, yeah. You get your Michael Jordans because people had to learn how to get better and better, and shit got tough, and people had to learn. better techniques.
Yep.
If you want to keep improving, you know, the competition is key for that. Nick, let's take a little break. We just hit the 1 hour mark. Take a little breaker, and then we'll return.
We think. 10-4.
Killed the video star. Internet. Interesting, huh? Remember, because video killed the radio star. Isn't that what they said?
Yeah.
Video killed the radio star, but internet killed the video star.
I think internet can make you your own star in a way. I mean, mm-hmm. YouTube. There's so many YouTube sensations, right?
That is true. Okay. So, continuing on. So, this was last January. January of 2014. The federal court struck down previous commission's rules and said that the FCC could adopt net neutrality rules, okay? But only if it could reclassify internet service providers as common carriers. Remember, that was under telephone lines.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be able to classify them as common carriers under something called Title II of the Communications Act of 1934. Remember I said something, they did some shit in 1934? It was Title II of the Communications Act of 1934. We're going to go into that. This would treat internet service providers as a public utility in which service cannot be discriminated and no longer classified under, it's currently classified under Section 706 of the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Bill Clinton signed that into law. Which calls it an information service. Internet service right now, ISPs are classified as an information, or not right now, but as of last week, they were classified as an information service, and the vote was to classify them as a telecommunication service so that they could be regulated by the FCC. Okay? So, we talked... Okay, so let's talk about what that Title II is. Title II. The FCC uses Title II to regulate telephone networks and call them telecommunications. The internet's not under this because it is it's considered an information service. If the internet gets classified under Title II, it will be considered under telecoms. And it will be regulatable like a utility. It would also apply to the mobile internet, your cell phone internet, which would eliminate cell phone internet throttling. If you pay for unlimited data, you've heard how people get throttled.
Yeah, they've already gotten rid of that, though.
And they've there's
tried to. I mean,
they've tried. They've that's been a huge battle. They've
well,
gone back
I mean, they're
forth.
Succeeding at it. I had Verizon for a long time. I had unlimited, and all my coworkers were like, "Dude, do not get rid of your fucking unlimited shit." Because mm-hmm. he's like, as soon as you get a new phone, they're gonna try to talk. They're gonna give you this new program where there's no, you know, you don't get unlimited, and they were right.
Yeah.
And when I got my new phone, because I had to, I fucking burnt mine up. I left it on the fucking golf course somewhere. They're like, "Well, dude, we're checking out your data. You don't use 4 gigs a month or whatever it was." And yeah.
But they don't tell you that all data is becoming more like the internet's becoming more and more data demanding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so obviously you're going to need more and more data in the future.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I tried to fucking rent a movie the other day to watch on the iPad here, and I was like, "Oh, you don't have enough storage." I'm like, "I just bought this fucking thing. I don't have that much shit on here."
Yeah. How many?
I don't have a lot of apps. I don't know, like 32, I think, or something.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And I can't even, like, I wanted to rent a movie, and I don't know.
So then... Does it make sense? Is it clear that the goal of net neutrality is to classify internet service providers as common carriers under Title II of the Communications Act of 1934? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is stupid because in 1934, there is no fucking idea of what the fucking internet would be.
No.
Right?
Yeah, which is... It's...
Why we...
It's going to get sillier.
Stuck to these stupid-ass laws.
It gets sillier.
Like, they just got rid of Prohibition at that time.
I know.
People were fucking dumb back
now,
then.
Now, what you're going to see, though, is... you're going to see... This is going to be completely enlightening. We talked about it before. In January of 2014, the Federal Appeals Court struck down key parts of the FCC's Open Internet Order of 2010. Since then, the FCC, who is led by Tom Wheeler, has vowed to write new rules for a quote-unquote open internet. As it stands, the FCC cannot regulate information providers. They're not communication providers. It prefers to govern internet service providers under Section 706 of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which makes them information providers. So in February 2014, the FCC adopted a rule making a proposal to allow a fast lane, but to prohibit blocking. Part of what the internet service providers were doing that was a threat was blocking competitors. So the proposal leaned more towards like your Section 706 authorization. And under 706, again, the FCC can regulate broadband infrastructure, but very loosely. They can regulate information services, but very loosely. Not as tightly as it can under Title II of the 1934 Act. All right. I know that gets a little complicated, but we had to go over that, or else the other stuff just won't make sense. Okay, so now we're going to get into the actual history here, okay? This is, we're going to go back into the 1920s when this shit was going down in the first place. So, in the 1920s, the telephone lines were starting to get spread out over the country, okay? And the U.S. government was seeing different companies compete with each other to put these lines out there. And it discouraged the investment in duplicate lines. So that 1934 Communications Act was passed by Roosevelt, who's a communist. But what this did was it gave AT&T, that was American Telephone and Telegraph. People don't know it was Telegraph, you know?
Beep, 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 beep,
yeah.
Beep, beep.
It was granted a legal monopoly, and it could build the telecom infrastructure of the country, and it was subsidized by the government, and it also it really thwarted any competitors from even being able to compete with them. Mm-hmm. So it granted them a monopoly to make the telecom infrastructure. Okay, that's going to come back to bite us. That is fascism. When you have government supporting a company, that's fascism. And prohibiting its rivals. So let's fast forward to 1982. AT&T at this time, we're going to call them Ma Bell.
Pacific Bell.
Yeah, like Ma Bell. You have your Ma Bell, which is the big bell, AT&T, mm-hmm. and then you have your baby bells. There's a difference. So after several antitrust suits, which are laws against having a monopoly, they agreed to relinquish regional control of the regional subsidiaries, and those became what were called the baby bells. And what happens is you end up having a war between AT&T, Ma Bell, and the baby bells, okay? And that happens for a lot of years, and that continues.
I can only imagine it being a pain in the ass. Like, I'm not trying to take the government side on here and this or whatever, but like, if you have multiple companies that provide, say, like in this case, a phone service, if there's any altercation with how they connect their phone lines, getting any, like, California to call New York, and you got to go through 20 different phone companies without that being a pain in the ass. Like, how do you prevent that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's that, and then that's where you kind of get into the where they interact with each other.
Yeah.
And there's rates.
You know, or a standard, like, this is a standard phone line. This is, like, our telephone poles.
But do you want the government to be in charge of the standard phone line?
Fuck,
you know,
no.
Like, yeah. Or do you want a private company doing it? You know, which is subject to corruption, you know? So, nothing's perfect. This world won't be perfect, but it's just food for thought.
Yeah, I mean, that's all I'm asking is, like, how do we make it better? And I'm just trying to empathize with problems that could happen.
Well, the first thing you got to do, before you can make it better, you got to know what's going on. Like, mm-hmm. education is key. And sure. Then you can make an accurate decision. So we talked about they relinquished control to these Bell operating companies. In 1984, these subsidiaries merged into 7 independent regional Bell operating companies, or RBOCs, or we call them Baby Bells. Okay, so you got Ma Bell and the Baby Bells. So, 2 classes of telecoms were recognized after 1984. You had AT&T, which was your long distance or inter-exchange carrier, or IXC, or your baby bells, which is your local exchange carrier, LEC. So, you had your IXC, the big one, or LECs, the regional ones, the baby bells. The IXC was AT&T that was bridging different regions of the United States. The LEC was Baby Bells, which serviced the regional networks. All right. So, the infrastructure give me 1 second. Here we go. Any LEC that was not part of the Bell system, was outside of that, was considered a competitive local exchange carrier, or a CLEC. It was in competition with the LECs. Okay? So you had your inter-exchange carriers, you had Ma Bell, you had your LECs, and then you had their competitors, the CLECs. Okay, Ma Bell was prohibited from entering the markets of the Baby Bells. They had to be separate now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, after the antitrust suits. They didn't want any monopolies, so they had to
be
separate.
They divide them up.
They called this deregulation, but it actually was more regulation. The Baby Bells dominated the LECs, and the AT&T, which was Ma Bell, faced competition. These guys started getting pretty big, the Baby Bells, the regional networks. In the 1990s, internet proliferation caused a huge boom because home computers, technology, the price of technology, shot home computers way down.
Oh, yeah.
And so everybody had a home computer, and everybody had technology now, and they were ready to get on the internet. So they were,
which is awesome.
It was that particular point in history where internet proliferation caused a boom, and that boom was directly in the internet service provider realm. You had national, international, and regional internet service providers, and they flourished. Tens of thousands of these things springing up everywhere. Craziest market ever. This is what
was like a new gold rush.
Exactly. So in 1995, the IXCs, which at that time now had grown into AT&T, MCI, and WorldCom, the big boys, and the Baby Bells, all of them were interested in offering internet services. All of them were ready to offer it to the actual consumer. They call it end service or something like that. Then you have, in 1996, right after all that, is the Telecommunications Act of 1996. That's when we talked about Section 706 of the Telecommunications Act signed by Bill Clinton. That's why after this big boom, they had to change legislation because shit was going crazy. The market was going crazy at the time.
It's all Al Gore's fault.
Yeah, I'm sure, because he invented the
internet. He invented it, bro.
That's true. After the Telecommunications Act of 1996 was a transition away from the previous monopoly provisions, and they said it was going to deregulate the telecom market to make it more competitive. The FCC commissioners and telecom lobbyists were basically in bed with each other, and they switched positions back and forth. Now, during this time, when everything was hot, you had people going from telecom lobby to FCC regulator, to telecom lobby to the FCC regulator. They should be completely on opposite sides, but people are jumping back and forth. Like, I think your latest, like, three FCC heads were originally lobbyists for the telecom industry.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Which is weird, right?
Awesome.
So the largest lobby was the international exchange carriers, or like your Ma Bell, right? And they basically wrote that Telecommunications Act of 1996. That gave them an advantage over their competitors, who were the Baby Bells, right? And it caused the Baby Bells, part of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, forced the Baby Bells to set a definite peering rate with the, remember how we talked about the CLECs?
Yeah.
The competitors with the LECs, the competitors with the Baby Bells, it forced them to have a determined price that was determined by the FCC. So it was written by the Ma Bells, and it forced the Baby Bells to have a set rate, peering rate, with the CLECs. Now, this is going to lead to a crash later on.
Damn it.
Yeah. So the IXCs could now, and another part is now the IXCs, the Ma Bell, how it was split before, how they couldn't enter the regional markets, now they could. After the Telecommunications Act of 1996, now they were allowed to enter those markets also. So they knew, they were basically setting it up for themselves. They had the lobbyists that became the chairman. And then they wrote the bill, and then now the Ma Bells are fucking in charge, right?
Running it.
So this was to keep the Baby Bells from restricting or denying user access to their competitors. The Baby Bells also had to lease part of their networks so retailers and resellers could make a profit. This was supposed to create a boom in bandwidth reselling. Not only were there separate internet service providers that were flourishing, tens of thousands, but there was something called bandwidth resellers that were flourishing too. The Telecom Act also established a telecommunications development fund, and this basically gave loans to startups and small businesses. So it encouraged, it gave money to people trying to get into this field. It created two categories: your telecom services, which were classified as common carriers like phone, like we talked about earlier, and the FCC can regulate them, and your information services, which is storage, processing, and publishing of information. The FCC has little regulatory authority over these things. After the Telecom Act of 1996, internet service providers nearly doubled. Bandwidth resellers flourished. There was heavy Wall Street investment. Your internet, your international exchange carriers entered the regional market, and they ended up buying up all of the CLECs. Okay, and this created your first end-to-end network since the original monopoly breakup of AT&T. And I think it was WorldCom, to where now you had a monopoly back again, where you had an end-to-end network of regional carrier, of internet, of, sorry, international exchange carrier, all the way to the end. And you could have somebody that connects somebody from California to Florida, and one company be in charge of all of that. So it created monopolies again, essentially. AT&T and WorldCom were your big monopolies that were formed out of that. So we understand that the rates were held artificially low. Does that make sense? Because part of that Telecommunications Act was to have the Baby Bells and the CLECs have set peering rates. So the rates were held artificially low during that Telecommunications Act. Now, in 1997... the Baby Bells sued the FCC, and they said they had to be able to set their own peering rates. They won. It took 3 years, and in 2000, they won that battle, and then the market forces prevailed, and the rates skyrocketed. So the peering rates skyrocketed, and all of those companies that were able to come in and all the funding that the Telecommunications Act had provided, it caused a huge crash. The bandwidth reseller market imploded along with the small independent carriers and the internet service providers. And that caused in 2001 what was known as the telecom crash, which led to the dot-com bubble and the dot-com crash that we hear about. You've heard about the dot-com bubble, the dot-com crash. That's the background of that whole crash.
And unfortunately, I didn't have the internet at that time. You know, I was a young man, chucking block, mixing concrete, doing construction work. But the internet wasn't as huge as it was back then. But I do remember hearing that, but it didn't affect me at the time.
Yeah, but that was that dot-com bubble, dot-com crash. That was because of all these acts. That was the 1996 Telecommunication Act that was supposed to deregulate, but it actually held rates lower than the market would have. The market normally dictates the rates, right? Just like the market wants to do right now with the fast lane, slow lane thing. That's the market would determine that rate. But now, net neutrality is going to go, nope, you can't do
this.
It
is the rate.
It's going to hold the rate down low again. So the infrastructure suffered, and the internet service providers couldn't provide the bandwidth that they promised, because now the bandwidth resellers went out of business, and now your ISPs can't provide the bandwidth that they promised in the contract to their customers. So between 1996 and 2006, almost three quarters of the internet service providers collapsed, like went out of business. In 2000, then you started to have your major mergers and monopolies form in order for these businesses to stay alive. AOL Time Warner was one of the largest corporate mergers in history. It was a $183 billion merger happened during that time. That became the largest telecom company. So as long as we know that these monopolies were formed out of government intervention and regulation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in March of 2014...
They always have to fuck something up.
Yeah, I know. In March of 2014, these giants lately have been accused of extracting money with the threat of throttling service from the content providers like Netflix and the internet and the smaller internet service providers because there's no competition to move to. And you talked about you don't have anywhere to go other than Time Warner, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's kind of what they're saying here is that these big companies now can kind of bully around some of the other content providers and your smaller internet service providers because they're the only show in town. But the only reason they're the only show in town is because these major monopolies were able to be formed because of all of this history, right? So your large internet service providers with regional monopolies are basically gouging content providers and smaller internet service providers. Your large ISPs want content providers who are using more content to pay more. This will support the cost of infrastructure, expansion, and improvement. Smaller ISPs must peer with the larger monopolies and pay those peering rates. Because they can't provide the services, they have to peer with them and provide the peering rates. So those monopolies, they're basically getting money from everybody.
They're loving it.
And now they're threatening to offer a fast lane and a slow lane. So it just provides both sides of the argument, right? Content providers claim that it's a monopoly money grab and that the squeeze from internet service providers... Oh, sorry. And basically, all in all, you're feeling the squeeze from the internet service providers overselling their bandwidth, how they sold too many plane tickets. Now we're seeing the squeeze and all of that, right? So it's really interesting the way this stuff all kind of comes together, I think. So recently, on December 13th of last year, 2014, Netflix agreed to pay Comcast for faster, more reliable service. That was done in the private market now. They paid for a fast lane. Netflix did the same with Verizon like the day after. They said, all right, that's just what we're going to do. And they're from what I've researched, they're currently in talks with AT&T for the same thing to pay for a fast lane. And that's determined by the market. They're allowed to do that. Netflix might pass that cost on to the consumer, but there's arguments that say they probably won't. But who knows?
Well, I mean, it makes sense. I mean,
you're getting higher quality video. You know, I mean, you're getting high definition video streamed to your.
If you're AT&T or if you're Verizon, and you could supplies a better product, you're going to get more customers, right? I mean, you're going to be able to pay for that bandwidth.
Yeah. So and here's...
You know, why... And, like, I personally have Verizon, but it's easier to just deal with what I have sometimes, you know? Like,
yeah.
I'm not a big cell phone... I am a big cell phone user, but I don't... I'm not going to waste my time just blowing shit out of proportion and... to change things or get a new phone from a different provider and all that, go through all that, unless they make it a lot better.
Yeah, yeah. You want to hear a clip, see what Michael Powell has to say about it? Michael Powell was the old FCC commissioner.
All right.
And he's no longer, and this happens to be the son of Colin Powell. And this guy's still, he's part of the system. He's the son of Colin Powell. He was... the head of like one of the major telecom lobby groups, and now he was FCC commissioner, and now I'm not sure what he does now, but he's done it all also, but this is at least his opinion.
tough rules to make all internet traffic equal. How would this impact not only the cable and internet companies, but also the consumer?
Joining us now is former FCC chairman and National Cable and Telecommunications Association CEO and president, Michael Powell. Michael, great to see you again.
Great to see you.
The big question, should the FCC be regulating the internet as if it was a utility? What do you think?
I think the simple answer is no. All you have to look at is the state of utility infrastructure in the United States, with crumbling roads, which breaking water pipes, and browning out electrical grids, and ask yourselves, is that a superior way to regulate the most dynamic infrastructure in world history? And I think the obvious answer is no.
What about the accusations, Michael? And we're thrilled to have you because your comment has real heft here. But what about the accusations that the little guy gets shut out? We just had Larry Flint, the founder and chairman of Hustler. And of course, the porn industry uses the pipes quite a bit when it comes to the internet. He said, you know, there are some companies that get trampled by the bigger ones, and that the Comcast and the Time Warner Cables of the world might hurt little startup companies. Is there a way to bridge that gap without regulating and being onerous when it comes to internet?
I think the short answer is, of course. It's easy to hypothesize a bunch of theoretical harms, but for nearly 20 years, the government has not regulated this infrastructure or imposed this kind of regime, and there's no demonstrable evidence that companies in the ISP industry of any size have ever attempted to do the things that these rules are supposedly intended to preserve or protect. So I don't think there's any evidence of that risk, and I think the government should have to have a higher standard of burden of proof before it asserts such a muscular regulatory arm around such a critical infrastructure.
There's also a danger, maybe it's paranoia, maybe it's real, on the part of a lot of people who have put stuff on the internet, that the FCC may try to regulate content. Would that be a very difficult jump for it to make if it got into any kind of regulation?
I don't think it would be a difficult thing to make. For example, the definition of what a telecom service is under the statute that the president's calling for being used as our national internet policy is so ambiguously written, I think it could easily encompass a whole host of applications, services, and innovation we never imagined were regulated by the FCC. Services like Skype, or voice over IP like Vonage. Even the Kindle book reader, you could argue, is a telecom service if the government is going to start looking at all internet ecosystem through those lenses. It's dangerous.
So there are people who are cringing when the president says adopt the strictest regulation possible when it comes to the internet. You just mentioned Vonage. You mentioned a couple of other names. The
Hi,
cable
everybody.
Guys, they spend a lot of money to make sure that things run relatively well. Should the Netflix of the world, though, or the 12-year-old kids who are downloading four movies at a time, just pay a teeny bit more than somebody like me who's just trying to print a Google Doc?
I think it's a fair point. I mean, I understand the mythology of the internet and its wonderful contribution to the country is demonstrable.
Sure. Yeah.
But the reality is, why should my mother or grandmother who are emailing lightly have to pay for and subsidize their next door neighbor who might be watching five high def movies a night? And to suggest that only end users should have to compensate for that under a heavy regulated regime is to shove the burden to other people. And there's an element of equity that has to be considered there.
Michael, getting back to your first point about how efficient the government bureaucracies are, we just had an election in which the public pretty soundly rejected the idea of micromanagement from the government in private sector affairs. Then you have the FCC chairman coming out and talking about this potential new regulation as a double-barreled approach to the government getting involved in the internet. How does that make you feel? What does that language mean to you?
Well, I have to say that when the government uses metaphors of pointing shotguns at one of the healthiest industries in the country, you ought to be worried. This is the most vibrant sector in our entire economy. The cable telecommunications sector is the number one investor in the United States. It has plowed in over $1 trillion over the last decade. It did not crumble one bit during the recession, continued to employ Americans, and continued to grow and expand capacity. I scratch my head to understand why a sector that vibrant vibrant, needs the sort of regulatory muscle that these proposals suggest.
Let's hope not, right?
It needs help from the government. Yeah, it's a dangerous expression.
Michael, it's wonderful to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Michael Powell, former FCC commissioner. So we're
So I know that was kind of long, but I thought that it kind of really illustrates what we've been talking about, like from a supposed authority figure, right? So what throws a whole twist in this whole thing is this. You talk about your supporters and opponents of net neutrality. Your supporters are people like Level 3, Google, Microsoft, Netflix, Amazon, AOL, the White House, and the FCC. Your opposers are your majorly your internet service providers who this will hurt. Verizon, AT&T, Comcast, National Cable and Telecom Association, and your National Music Publishers Association. Okay, so check this out. In support of Netflix is Google. Sorry, in support of net neutrality is Google. Google is starting a new project called Google Fiber. Google Fiber and other satellite providers threaten the current ISP infrastructure. Google is installing fiber optic cable throughout the country, and it's going to offer 1 gigabyte per second speed. Google and other internet service provider competitors and content providers are supporting net neutrality and its ability to deny internet service providers the right to throttle, fast lane, slow lane, any of that. So you see how Google has now a fiduciary impetus to attack these internet service providers because it helps them business-wise. So you wonder why Google is on the side of net neutrality. That's why. They're installing a background infrastructure behind these guys. That's interesting. And then, so check this out. Google Fiber, one of the things it says, it refuses to throttle. It allows content providers free access to space and power in their facilities and provides content services on their own. Google will be a major competitor to large ISP monopolies when this is done. So doesn't it make sense that they're kind of supporting net neutrality? Mm-hmm. They're one of the big funders behind net neutrality.
They're huge, yeah.
I thought that was really interesting.
But I mean, at the same time, I love them. I use them, so...
I stopped using them.
Really?
Yep.
Where do you go through? Bing or?
To search.
Yeah.
I use something called DuckDuckGo. It's an anonymous searcher. It doesn't store any of your shit. So there is a constant, like right now, stored. There's a constant storage of the shit you've searched.
Your whole life, and
God forbid there's ever a hacker that puts that out on the internet one day, you know, but it just is. So DuckDuckGo is supposedly it's an anonymous search engine, but so what I was going to do is I was going to get into this whole thing of legislation, but we're on a time crunch, so I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to only read the last two. If you guys want to look it up yourself, just try to do some research on your own on the legislation, the background legislation behind this. It's really interesting. We've kind of touched on it on what we talked about earlier. That's why I'm not going to... A lot of this would be a reiteration. But the most important part that I want to talk about is the legislation as of late. On January 14th, 2014, the D.C. Court of Appeals overturned the Open Internet Order, and it told the FCC that if it wants to treat the internet like a telecom service, it must not classify it as an information service. And as of a few days ago, on February 26, 2015, the FCC, in a vote of 3-2, approved new open internet rules which classified internet service providers as telecoms under Title II. So, as of last week, Now, this whole story that we're talking about and how it started with classifying them as a telecom under Title II of the original Communications Act of 1934, that just got approved. Okay? So, that bears the question. Sorry, not bears. That begs the question. What does that mean for us? Your average human being that's very concerned about freedom. Well, it's tough to tell. There's not a lot of stuff on the internet. So one of the things they said is and we're going to go into a clip right here, is apparently there is a 332-page rule book that the FCC, what they voted 3-2 on, they voted in affirmation of this 332-page rule book, which has never been accessible to the public. We don't know what this is. These are the rules that the future internet will be governed by. Okay? We have no idea what it is. And this is before the actual vote, just to give a little background.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, net neutrality, and there's all kinds of stories going around, and we were going right to the source now to find out exactly what President Obama is thinking about here and what the results might mean for all of us. And joining us now, once again, is Ajit Pai, FCC Commissioner, appointed by President Obama. Hello, sir.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. All right, so how concerned should we be about this net neutrality? What is it going to mean in its current proposed form?
Well, first and foremost, you should be concerned because you don't have access to the plan. Only I and other people in the FCC building do. And I think that it's important for the public to be educated about what is in this plan before the FCC votes on it. But that point aside, I think people should be concerned about the plan itself. It's going to mean billions of dollars in new taxes on broadband for the first time. It's going to mean slower speeds and less broadband options as these complex regulations get put on companies that are already having a difficult time justifying building out to, say, rural America. It's going to mean a bonus for the trial lawyers who are going to be able to sue at the FCC or in federal court for any sorts of real or hypothetical harms. And I think also additionally, it's going to lead to less competition. And ultimately, none of these things is good for the American consumer. And you know, both for process and substance reasons, I've been speaking out on Twitter and on the airwaves as best I can.
Yeah, no, and you've been doing a very good job in raising the alarm. So what's the likelihood, first of all, before I get to other issues on this, what's the likelihood of this passing?
Well, unfortunately, it looks like the cake has been baked. The president gave his direction to the FCC back in early November, and lo and behold, the FCC majority has put together President Obama's plan for internet regulation and looks to be poised to pass it on a 3-2 vote. So, nonetheless, I'm going to keep trying to fight the good fight as best I can, and then afterward, working with members of Congress and the American public to see what can be done to limit the damage.
And you believe that this is an alarmingly unprecedented direct involvement by the executive branch into what you guys do, what your commission does, correct?
It is. Historically, all the way back to its inception in 1934, the FCC has been an independent agency, and that means that people look to us to render our expert, objective judgment about these complicated technical questions. But when you have a politician shortly after the midterm elections deciding to direct the agency to do X, Y, and Z, and telling us he wants us to use a particular legal theory to do it, you're in uncharted territory, at least in my experience. And I think compromising the independence of the agency is bad enough, but especially when it involves government control of the internet, that's just a dangerous thing, dangerous road for us to travel on.
All right, now let's talk about bloggers, and let's talk about, I read stories of regulating blogs and regulating content, and how realistic is that?
I think one of the things that we see is that free speech isn't just a constitutional right. It's also a culture, a cultural commitment. And I think we see over at the Federal Election Commission, for example, some people over there want to regulate things like the Drudge Report or other political speech right. online because they think it affects elections. I mean, it's not a give. The First Amendment is not a self-executing promise. And I think it's important for people, both in elected office, at administrative agencies, and in the public, to make clear that free speech, especially on the internet, has to remain protected.
Yeah, well, this is such an important issue. Is there anything we could do as a public before this gets voted in?
Well, unfortunately, it looks like the FCC is going to adopt it without making this document public. But that said, if your listeners want to follow me at Ajit Pai FCC, AJITPAIFCC, I'll keep putting information out there as I learn about it. In the meantime, contact your elected representatives and let them know that the agency needs to be transparent and that we need to focus on broadband competition,
right.
not government regulation as a solution
All
to
right.
these problems.
Mr. Commissioner, thank you so much. We'll speak to you again, sir. Thank you.
Yes, and I've been looking for those rules. I've been looking for them to become public, and they still have not made them public. Even though they voted 3-2 in favor of them, they are still not made public. Where I actually really like this guy. His name's Ajit Pai. AJITPAI. Now, he asked for people to follow him on Twitter, and he'll give constant updates on when they eventually do release these rules. Obama, it was 332 pages. They got a revised edition that I think came down to 312 or 317 pages or something like that. Still a ridiculous amount of pages. But he said he's going to give Twitter releases when it happens. I followed him on Twitter on our The Beacon podcast Twitter page. He still has not. He said it's still not out. And so they said they were going to release it after they voted on it. And they voted on it and they still haven't. Everything I've researched, they still have not let it out. And that's really weird. Why won't you guys let out the rules, the plans? These are the plans on what you intend on what you are going to do to the internet. So, let's go back to Ajit Pai talking more about these rules, because this is important. What's in these fucking rules? We have to know.
Do you think it'll pass when you vote?
I would expect that it's going to be a 3-2 vote on February 26, barring some unforeseen circumstance.
Why is that regulation book so thick?
Well, that's part of the reason why I want this to be released to the American public. I think if you told the average American that the FCC is going to propose regulations for the internet economy that are 332 pages long, and you're not going to be able to see it until the FCC adopts it, they would think that's the wrong way to go. And part of the reason why I've been so outspoken about this plan is that it's very intrusive. Unfortunately, under the FCC's rules, I can't describe with any particularity what's in the document. And so I think that we at the FCC should be as open and transparent as the internet itself and let the American people see for themselves what it is that we're talking about.
Wait a minute. You can't tell me what's in the document?
That is correct. Stamped on the front is an internal, use-only, non-public moniker. And unless I'm authorized by the chairman to disclose this, I can't let you or any of the other millions of Americans who are interested in the internet economy know what the FCC is going to do.
Why?
Until we vote on February 26th, this document will not be released.
Why?
Well, that's been the traditional practice, believe it or not, of the FCC. The chairman circulates a proposal 3 weeks before we vote on it. It's kept a secret within the walls of the FCC. And only after we vote on it and staff has a chance to make changes does the public get to see what exactly it is that we voted on.
So technically,
especially on
what can viewers, if viewers are going to call the FCC, what are you going to tell them if they don't know what's in the document? If I tell them don't pass this if I don't know what's in it?
That's exactly the problem, and that's part of the reason why I have been banging the drum in favor of releasing the document, and barring that, trying to educate the public as best I can within the rules to let them know what's in it. And they can certainly go to my website on the FCC.gov page and see some of the statements I've put out there that describe, with as much particularity as I can, what the FCC is poised to do. It's critical for the American people to be informed.
Have you read the whole thing?
I spent the bulk of the last 5 days reading through it, all 2,000-some footnotes, and I can tell you it is a pretty rough slog, especially when you've got a couple of toddlers climbing all over you.
Are there parts you agree with?
Anyways, yeah. So, hello. So, another thing, to quote Ajit Pai. So obviously we know there's a 332-page plan that the public cannot read, still has not been able to read as of this recording. The FCC commissioner, Ajit Pai, what he said, he was also quoted as saying, it is a monumental shift toward government control of the internet. Let that soak in. He read it, and he's not allowed to tell us what's in it. We haven't had access to it, but he said, quote unquote, it is a monumental shift towards government control of the internet. Where didn't they tell us that it wasn't going to be that? Didn't they tell us that this was going to promote a free and open internet? Until the people wake up, we will be slaves. We act like sheep. We act like sheep out there. And then when there's one sheep that starts to look around and go, hey, this doesn't make sense. Why are they leading us into this corral to get shaved and slaughtered? Why is that happening? They persecute those people. And they harass them. They criticize them. They make fun of them. And they tell them to get back in line, get shaved, get killed. That's exactly what's happening in society right now. We have to wake the fuck up, people. That now, the internet just got controlled. And I know a lot of people don't like hearing that. And you're going to come up with all sorts of psychological defense mechanisms that make you go, no, that's just bullshit. No, this is just a podcast. No, and you don't want to hear it. But the truth, that's the truth of the matter. Look, I have more time to do research. I do way more research than you could imagine. And I happen to know the research alleys, and I have very, very clever people in my circle. And that's the truth. That is the absolute truth. So where does this end? This is where I leave off. Where does this end for us? My question is, where are those rules? Where are they? Can we have access to them? If any of you find those rules, please post them to either the Beacon Podcast Twitter or the Beacon Podcast Facebook, or email them to thebeaconpodcast@gmail.com. It's 332 pages that the public has not seen. So, what could possibly happen? And I'm only going to talk about what could / is likely to happen out of these 332 pages. This is mostly conjecture, but it's based on a very educated guess based on multiple different sources and what I've studied about what the agenda is. So, number one, it could raise your rates at home for internet. Number two, it could impose a federal tax on your broadband bill. So at home, when you get your bill, you may see it now a extra federal tax for the FCC's ability to govern us. We know for a fact that it will include broadband control. Broadband control. Over mobile networks. Oh, so over your cell phone, the broadband internet over your cell phone is subject to this. Sorry, I was reading something else at the same time. One thing it also might do that we should be aware of, just based on history alone, is it may regulate the smaller internet service providers out of business, as the larger internet service providers may have actually been behind this, as has happened in the past, as history tends to repeat itself, and that's why you study history. That's also possible. It may regulate the smaller ISPs and leave the larger ISPs alone, giving the larger ISPs advantage. Those are just possible things that could happen. So, if you haven't guessed yet, Nick is gone. He had something come up, and all you got is Matt now. So it's just me. I'm only going to take just a couple more minutes of your time, but I thought it's important to talk to you guys about a couple other issues that is going on in the news. The first one I want to talk about is Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, came out and gave a killer speech, right? Or so-called a killer speech. To one half of the population, it was a welcome cry. For the Christians, it was a welcome cry to aid Israel in defending themselves against the threat of a nuclear-armed Iran. Now, this is serious. This is serious shit we're talking here. They really want to recruit America to aid them in attacking Iran's ability to get a nuclear weapon, right? Now, on the other hand, you have, say, your Iranians that say, well, everybody else has nuclear weapons, and Israel has a bunch of nuclear weapons that they haven't even disclosed. We don't even know how many they have. They could have more than all the countries combined. We don't know, because they haven't signed. All the countries that have nukes have signed something called the IAEA. It's a UN. It's a UN signatory list, but the IAEA has us declare how many nukes we have, and then agree to certain rules. The only people that have nukes that have not signed it are Israel. And so it makes sense to me that Iran would be a little sketchy about that, because Israel is its declared enemy, and Benjamin Netanyahu is in America, is trying to rally America to attack Iran. So there's two sides to this story, and just be smart about it. Don't be on the wrong side just because you're American, you know. And I'm not necessarily saying there's a wrong or a right side. What I actually believe is there's two wrong sides. What's happened is when people have too much money, they split the world up into opposing camps that fight each other. They get brainwashed into fighting each other to the death. And that's what's happening right now. So, let's hear some of his speech.
Again, terror by the fundamental Islam hits Europe, and this time it's Denmark. We send our condolences to the Danish people, and also to the...
Ooh, sorry, guys. This is the other thing I wanted to talk about Netanyahu is that Jews have been being persecuted by radical Islamists throughout Europe. And Netanyahu came out publicly and made a speech welcoming them all back into Israel, which is extremely important if you've studied world history on a large scale.
Again, terror by the fundamental Islam hits Europe, and this time it's Denmark. We send our condolences to the Danish people and also to the Jewish community in Denmark. We call upon the Jews, our brothers and sisters. Israel is your home. We are preparing to absorb a mass immigration from Europe. Jews of Europe, Jews of the world, I say Israel is waiting for you with open arms.
So he's saying, Jews immigrate back to Israel. You're going to be persecuted. Now, just a little foresight into some of the stuff we're going to talk about on this podcast later. Yes, that's true, and that's going to happen. But it's not going the how do you put this? We really have to study a lot more stuff before this will make sense. But if you guys are those who have studied and you're astute in your studies, then just know this. The Jews have always been the scapegoats throughout history. They are going to be blamed as the world's bankers. And at an opportune time, the protocols of the learned elders of Zion will come out as a Jewish conspiracy, and the Jews will be implicated as being the conspiring force behind everything you see going on in the world, and the world will persecute the Jews, and who knows what will happen to them. My best for them, but that's what the plans are for the Jews, which absolutely sucks. So it's very interesting right now that Netanyahu is calling all the Jews back to Israel, because every time anything in history that is actually really substantial has happened, it always involves either the Jews going back to that land or being dispersed out of that land, if you study your history. Okay, so the other thing I want to talk about is the racial divide in the country and how it was actually outlined. It's been outlined lately. We had the Selma anniversary, and Obama got out there and started preaching all sorts of communist rhetoric. And if you haven't studied communism, study communism and listen to his speech. And then another thing, we had the Grammys. The Grammys said this.
First, I would like to thank God that lives in us all. Recently, John and I got to go to Selma and perform Glory on the same bridge that Dr. King and the people of the Civil Rights Movement marched on 50 years ago. This bridge was once a landmark of a divided nation, but now is a symbol for change. The spirit of this bridge transcends race, gender, religion, sexual orientation, and social status. The spirit of this bridge connects the kid from the south side of Chicago, dreaming of a better life, to those in France standing up for their freedom of expression, to the people in Hong Kong protesting for democracy. This bridge was built on hope, welded with compassion, and elevated by love for all human beings. Thank you. Nina Simone said, "It's an artist's duty to reflect the times in which we live." We wrote this song for a film that was based on events that were 50 years ago, but we say that Selma is now because the struggle for justice is right now. Yeah. We know that the Voting Rights Act that they fought for 50 years ago is being compromised right now in this country today. We know that right now, the struggle for freedom and justice is real. We live in the most incarcerated country in the world. There are more black men under correctional control today than were under slavery in 1850. When people are marching with our song, we want to tell you we are with you, we see you, we love you, and march on. God bless you. Thank you.
He says, Selma is now. So without any further ado, I'm going to sign off, and we have about a 10-minute outro. Please listen to it. It is another gem of knowledge if you can understand what it's saying. We love you guys. This is the Beacon Podcast, always hitting you with mad truth. And we'll be back with some more. Peace out. Love you guys.
Of the secret societies, the royal families, and what's happening in the world today is through genealogy. We have found a direct connection between the Peasants' Rebellion in England, the French Revolution, the Ronald Reagan and George Bush political campaign, and the George Bush political campaign. As far as the Peasants' Rebellion goes, the Encyclopedia Britannica calls it a, quote, curiously spontaneous rebellion. Barbara Tuchman, in her 14th century history, A Distant Mirror, said that the rebellion spread, quote, with some evidence of planning. Winston Churchill went even further. In his work, The Birth of Britain, he wrote, quote, throughout the summer of 1381, there was a general ferment. Beneath it all lay organization. Agents moved around the villages of central England in touch with a, quote, great society, unquote, which was said to meet in London. The spark of rebellion was being fanned vigorously, and finally, the signal was given. Even though he had been arrested, excommunicated, and even now was a prisoner in the ecclesiastic prison at Maidstone in Kent, letters went out from priest John Ball and from other priests who followed him. Clerics were then the only literate class. So letters must have been received by local priests and were obviously intended to be shared with or read aloud to others. They all contained a signal to act now, which could put to rest the concept that the rebellion was simply a spontaneous convulsion of frustration that just happened to affect 100,000 Englishmen all at the same time. This from a letter from John Ball. In it he says, quote, John Ball griddeth you well all and doth you to understand he hath rung in your bell. Now, right and might, while and skyle, God speed every dale, which means ideal, now is time, unquote. From priest Jake Carter, quote, you have great need to take God with you in all your deeds, for now is time to be war, unquote. From priest Jake Truman, quote, Jake Truman doth you to understand that falseness and guile have reigned too long, and truth hath been set under a luck, and falseness reigneth in every flock. God do both, for now is time, unquote. Now you'll notice that in every one of those quotes, there was one phrase that stands out, and that phrase is, now is time. One letter from John Ball, quote, St. Mary Priest, unquote, is worth quoting in its entirety. Even with the medieval English spelling, the meaning will be clear. Lechery and gluttony were frequent points in his accusations of high church leaders. Quote, John Ball sent Mary Priest Greats well, all manner men, bides him in the name of the Trinity. Father and Son and Holy Ghost stand mainly together in truth and help his truth and truth shall help you. Now reigneth pride in prize, and covetous is hold, wise and lechery, withouten shame, and gluttony, withouten blame. Envy reigneth with treason, and sloth is take in great season. God do both, for now is time. Amen. Unquote. Now, folks, if you research the history of the French Revolution, you will hear that the spark, the word that spread through the country like wildfire, that ignited the rebellion in France, was, quote, now is the time. Literally the same phrase. Some say that in the American Revolution, the same phrase was heard, and we find mention of it in several texts, but not like it was heard in the Peasants' Revolt in England, and not like it was heard in the French Revolution. But it was heard again in modern times. It was the campaign slogan of the Bush-Reagan campaign, and was used again in the Bush campaign. Now is the time. Now is the time. We'll be right back.